Mike Waltz has no plans to resign and stuck to his schedule. On Tuesday, he talked to his Russian counterpart about a Black Sea ceasefire deal and later on Tuesday spoke to President Trump. Mike Waltz is also telling colleagues that he has never met or talked to the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic magazine, Jeffrey Goldberg. Democrats on the House Armed Services Committee are calling for Mike Waltz's ouster over the national security breach. "This is outrageous national security breach and heads should roll. We need a full investigation and hearing into this on the House Armed Services Committee as soon as possible," according to Representative Chris DeLuzio, Democrat of Pennsylvania. And also Representative Sarah Jacobs, Democrat of California, said, "We can't chalk this up to a simple mistake. People should be fired for this."
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, extra deeds for suhoor and iftar. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab here on IB English Radio. And so I've found something in particular that some of you maybe know, many of you maybe know, and this is just some extra deeds. So maybe we can increase our rewards, maybe in sort of unexpected ways. So, for example, there's obviously we all know about Qadr night and that we're meant to recite Surah Al-Qadr that night, but it's also said, so narrations also tell us, that if we recite this surah at suhoor and iftar time, we are also given particular rewards that are, in a sense, almost unexpected. At least to me, they were unexpected. And so obviously, so reciting Surah Al-Qadr at suhoor and iftar is especially recommended. So it's been narrated, and I'll just sort of try and read this word for word. Every believer who observes fast and at dawn, so suhoor, and at fast breaking, iftar, recites the Surah Al-Qadr, so the same surah that we recite on the nights of power, during the period of dawn and fast breaking, is like the martyr who is wallowing in his own blood. So, yeah, this is obviously very high, because obviously we often hear about, you know, how can we receive the reward of a martyr, because obviously the reward of the martyr, the status of the martyr is a very unique one. And obviously I'll talk a little bit about this, but yeah, this is not a huge requirement. It's not a big challenge for us to actually do this, observe this reciting.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on RB English Radio. And so I'm talking about this extra, not a little thing, but an extra deeds we can do at Suhoor and Iftar time, which is to recite the very famous surah that we recite on the nights of power, the surah Al-Qadr. And if we recite them at the times of Suhoor and Iftar, we will, according to narrations, receive the same reward. We will be treated like the martyr who was wallowing in his own blood. And I'm just going to add in a few things. Obviously, the martyrs, those people who are martyred, you know, obviously their status is so special that, you know, they don't even need the, since they have become pox, so they don't even need the ritual washing of the dead usually receive. So that is how unique and how special their status is. So in a sense, they are martyrs. So they might be martyred there, you know, on the earth, in the soil, and that's it. They are ready to, you know, go to Allah, basically, as they are. Nothing else is required. And so obviously to think about that, you know, just through, and obviously I'm not saying that, so obviously that is one aspect of the martyrs, but obviously to receive the reward of the martyrs, and the martyrs have, you know, they have many other, let's say, qualities, and these are extra maybe, but I'll just add them. Obviously we know martyrs can even, they're not even confined to their graves. They can, you know, they can sort of move around. They are truly alive. But just to, in a sense, receive the status with Allah of the martyr, that surely in itself would be worth considering doing this recitation at Suhoor and Iftar. So I leave this with you and also request you to also maybe go and find this narration and read it to yourself again and think more deeply upon that and think more deeply upon maybe the Surah Al-Qadr itself and also the status of all our martyrs. And it'd be especially during the holy month of Ramadan to actually be doing all that anyway. And I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IB English Radio, and farewell for today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
South Africa's iconic freedom fighter and first democratically elected leader Nelson Mandela once remarked, "We know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians." So how can the International Quds Day be utilized as a strategic platform to further Mandela's vision of a free Palestine and work towards realizing his dream? And to discuss the International Quds Day and Africa's support for the liberation of Palestine, we are joined by Dr. Feroz Osman. He is the executive member of Media Review Network. We are also joined by Hassan Loget. He is the co-founder of Media Justice Africa. The International Quds Day is observed annually on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. Established by Imam Khomeini in 1979, this popular occasion serves as a global expression of solidarity with the Palestinian people in their struggle against the Israeli apartheid regime and its ongoing atrocities. Quds Day has united voices worldwide in support of Palestine, and today, Africa has emerged as a formidable resistance force against the Israeli genocidal regime. Despite intense U.S. pressure and Israeli attempts to infiltrate the continent, Africa's resistance continues to strengthen. Countries like South Africa, drawing from their own anti-apartheid struggle, are at the forefront of resisting the Israeli apartheid regime. South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice further cements Africa's role as a leading advocate for Palestinian liberation. Africa is proving that solidarity with Palestine is more than symbolic. It is a firm commitment to dismantling the Israeli apartheid regime. So how can the International Codes Day be utilized as a powerful platform to advance Nelson Mandela's vision of a free Palestine and turn his call for justice into meaningful action on the global stage?
Africa backs Quds liberation.
Each year on the International Quds Day, large-scale demonstrations take place across Africa in support of Palestine. Home to one-third of the global Muslim population, the continent sees hundreds of thousands joining the worldwide movement advocating for Palestine's liberation. A participant at one of the demonstrations held in the coastal city of Mombasa in Kenya speaks here on the importance of standing with the oppressed people of Palestine.
We should not be ashamed to stand with the oppressors if our hearts are burning, but we keep away from the people who are oppressed, we can't even raise the voices, then shame on us. We have one thing left on us, and that's our voice. And if we come out, we should claim this occupation no more and not say Israel is a free state, but Israel is a no state. Because it was a usurped land of the Palestinians, given by the British, the Balfour Declaration, gave them land that doesn't belong to them. Why? Because they wanted to get rid of the Jews that were there. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to me, but please, I would request you, echo this out. Remind the people of the world that the oppressed need your voices.
The observance of the International Quds Day, established in 1979 by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, has become a global tradition of marches and conferences advocating for the Palestinian cause. His appeal for global solidarity continues to resonate worldwide. Africa is part and parcel of this international movement in support of Palestine. Now, let's start off with Dr. Firoz Osman. How has the International Quds Day contributed to raising awareness about the Palestinian liberation struggle across the African continent?
The Iranian Revolution in 1979 was a true revolution. In other words, many of the other revolutions that have taken place did not remove the institutions and the deep state. For example, what happened in Egypt. You know, it lasted a year and then it was overthrown again. And the old systems and their controllers came back in power. So it is probably the, in recent memory, the only true revolution. And it is quite remarkable for Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah Alayh, that in 1979, he already declared Al-Quds Day. It showed their determination to free the third most holiest shrine. And it is a day that has been commemorated now ever since 45 years or plus. And it has created a global phenomenon, not only in Africa, as we mentioned, but throughout the world, where Palestine has been brought up into the map. Many others are gaining, given under the current circumstances, what is happening in Gaza, that they are getting courage from what has been happening in Gaza. There is no doubt that, you know, it is Iran that stands against the world system that wants to occupy and oppress people, and it is the Palestinians in Gaza that is fighting the same phenomenon with a great deal of courage, looking to Al-Quds for their liberation, to all countries that are helping them. And in fact, it is the protest marches that began right in Iran in 1979 that continues till this day.
Thanks for that, Dr. Osman. Now let's bring in Hassan Loget. At the 30th African Union Summit held in Addis Ababa last February, African leaders took a strong position against Israel, denouncing its assault on Gaza as genocide and demanding a halt to all cooperation until the Israeli occupation ends. Now, how does Africa's steadfast support for Palestine pose a significant challenge to Netanyahu, who has spent the past decade working to expand Israel's influence across the continent?
The 38th African summit, the AU summit, held in Addis, was very significant because it suggested for the first time that Africa was uniting once again behind Palestine. We have to go back many decades, I think in the early 1980s, when the Organization of African Unity was at its height, trying to create a program for the liberation of the African continent from colonialism and apartheid, that they made a statement in the founding declaration of the African People's Charter, African Charter for Human and People's Rights. And that charter, also known as the Banjul document, was very, very instrumental in putting Zionism as one of the targets. And I wanted to quote a little bit of it. The charter basically said they wanted to achieve the total liberation of Africa, of peoples which are still struggling for their dignity and genuine independence, and undertaking to eliminate colonialism, neocolonialism, apartheid, and Zionism, and to dismantle aggressive foreign military bases and all forms of discrimination, particularly those based on race, ethnic groups, color, sex, language, religion, or political opinion. So it looks like this was a victory for the progressive forces led by South Africa and Algeria.
Ties between the Israeli apartheid regime and the African Union significantly worsen after Israel's assault on Gaza in October 2023. Which led to mass atrocities and genocide, resulting in the deaths of over 50,000 Palestinian women and children. Across Africa, people have gathered in massive numbers for rallies in solidarity with Palestine, especially during International Quds Day. These demonstrations impacted the African Union's policy decisions.
The African Union is pivotal. It is important for increasing pressure on the Zionist entity. If we recall way back in 1973, most African countries, almost all bar one or two, broke their ties after the oil embargo in support of the Palestinians, in support of the Arab world. However, the Zionist entity's aim is to bring about a change in Africa, in the African nation states, through the observer status in the African Union. We know a year or two ago that South Africa played a pivotal role to remove the Zionist entity from its observer status in the African Union, despite the fact that some of the African Union member states wanted Israel to be present. You see, what the Zionist state does is to use its soft power, its technology, its military, where they bribe and blackmail and try to influence the African nation states to support Israel against the Palestinians. And this is where, again, the Iranian Islamic Republic of Iran has played an important role. It is also important for other Muslim nations to be aware of what is happening in parts of Africa, and to help the African nations to ward off the soft power that is that the Zionist entity is using.
Many African countries are actively forging stronger ties with global powers that challenge Western dominance, such as China, Russia, and Iran. These alliances grant them greater political leverage, enabling them to take more independent stances on international matters, including the Palestinian issue. The evolving geopolitical landscape has played a key role in further isolating Israel's apartheid regime in Africa.
Where you find Israel, you'll find conflict. And I think that the countries that want to turn away from conflict have to find a path of peace and are looking for other ways. In the Sahel region, a number of countries have kicked off the leadership military alliances with France. But as I pointed out earlier, we need to negotiate new terms of engagement and relationships with countries like Russia. And so that we do not find ourselves a few years down the line with someone that we cannot live with. We need to live with countries that will affirm African values so that Africa can use its own minerals for its betterment. And we can't replace one set of dictators for another. So yes, getting France out has been strategic, but Africa must renegotiate its terms of engagement with other countries on its own politics, its own agenda that's African-centric. And Kwame Nkrumah was very, very clear that Africa's got a long way to build a United States of Africa where all our resources could be used to uplift our own people.
The comparison between the Israeli regime policies towards Palestinians and the deposed South African apartheid regime has been made by both scholars and political leaders. Now, Dr. Osman, this is for you. In what ways do you see these parallels playing out today, particularly because Western powers, which once supported the apartheid regime in South Africa, are now backing the Israeli apartheid regime?
South Africa under apartheid is exactly the same as apartheid in Israel. And this is said very clearly by our first president, Nelson Mandela. It was said by our moral voice in South Africa, Bishop Tutu. In fact, they didn't say it's exactly the same. They say what is going on in Israel is worse than what has happened in South Africa. That the apartheid there is worse. And we can see it from the genocide. In fact, the Media Review Network commissioned a book, and it is entitled Why Israel? The Anatomy of Zionist Apartheid, a South African Perspective, where it makes very clear the parallels between what was under apartheid in South Africa and what is apartheid in Israel at the moment. And in fact, it's become so obvious that it is no longer a debatable issue. The reason for the support of Zionist apartheid is that the same countries that supported white apartheid racism in South Africa are supporting the Zionist Israeli state, such as Germany, United States of America, Great Britain, France. All of them supported white South Africa until it became untenable, until they could no longer control it and could not stop it. So these are the same racist, white settler, colonial regimes that are supporting Israel today. And in fact, we can see that what is going on with the Trump administration today, that it is white settler colonialism.
Well, thanks for that, Dr. Osman. Let's now take a short break before we continue our discussion on Africa's solidarity with Palestine as we mark the International Courts Day. Stay with us.
Africa backs Quds liberation.
In late 2023, South Africa filed a case at the International Court of Justice over the Israeli apartheid regime's genocidal war on Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Ron Lamola, the current South African foreign minister, speaks here at the ICJ, where he led his country's legal team while serving as the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. Let's take a listen.
Thank you, Madam President, and distinguished members of the court. It is an honor for me to stand here in front of you on behalf of the Republic of South Africa on this exceptional case. In extending our hands across the miles to the people of Palestine, we do so in full knowledge that we are part of a humanity that is at one. These were the words of our founding president, Nelson Mandela. This is the spirit in which South Africa acceded to the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of Crime of Genocide in 1998. This is the spirit in which we approach this court as a contracting party to the Convention. This is a commitment we owe to the people of Palestine and Israelis alike. As previously mentioned, the violence and the destruction in Palestine and Israel did not begin on the 7th of October 2023. The Palestinians have experienced systematic oppression and violence for the last 76 years.
While South Africa's case at the International Court of Justice has been described as both a legal and moral stance against the genocide in Gaza. Now, Mr. Logan, this is for you. How significant is this moment for South Africa's history, given its own past with apartheid, and how does it shape its role in global justice and human rights advocacy?
We have to find whatever means possible to preserve a sensible system in the world, a system of equality amongst nations, so that the rule of law, international human rights law, can actually prevail. At present, Trump wants might to rule, not justice, might. And I think South Africa is correct in building these alliances. Our ambassador was declared a persona non grata in America, and Trump has basically asked him to leave the country. This is Ibrahim Rasool, for simply speaking at a web conference in this country, Mistra, where he basically said that Trump and him are fearing the increasing numbers of black and brown peoples in the world, in America, that are beginning to have influence. And he implied that they were trying to preserve white supremacist politics. None of that is untrue, but he's chosen to punish South Africa. So Trump and him are being vindictive, not only to South Africa, but anyone who dared to oppose them, even people in his own party. But South Africa is being bullied. Unfortunately, there are a number of people in our country who actually support Trump, and they happen to be from those who are privileged, happen to be largely white.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Julius Malema, the leader of South Africa's Economic Freedom Fighters Party, frequently takes part in demonstrations backing the Palestinian resistance. In this speech, he expresses his support for Hamas, the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement. Let's tune in.
What type of a government do we have in Israel that goes and bomb a hospital where people have run away? For refugee, where people are sick, where children are there, where pregnant women are there, you bomb a hospital. And you say you are looking for Hamas, but you are killing innocent children. There is nothing wrong Hamas did. This folk tongues and people speaking in parables and we don't know what they are hearing, what they are saying, it's wrong. When you are oppressed, the only option you have is to fight. And that's what Hamas is doing. They are fighting for their freedom. Mandela did the same thing, took up the guns and fought for the freedom of the people of South Africa. When you are oppressed, you only have one option. Confront the enemy and shoot to kill. Do not kiss the enemy.
South Africa's liberation hero, Nelson Mandela, became known and respected all over the world as a symbol of the struggle against apartheid and all forms of racism. He was steadfast in his support for the liberation of Palestine. He famously stated that, "We know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians."
Mr. Loggett, you have the last word. How can events like the International Courts Day be leveraged as a platform to advance Nelson Mandela's vision of a free Palestine and turn his aspiration into a reality?
When the late president, liberation hero Nelson Mandela, said, "Our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of Palestinians," he basically drew inspiration from the time when the ANC in exile was trained and supported by the Palestinian Liberation Organization. It was a unity built in the trenches. And when he went to America, they tried to ask him to disassociate from Arafat and the PLO and Fatah. And he said, when days were dark and friends were few, only Palestinians, Libya and other countries stood by us while others ignored us. And really, this is the message of Sumud, as the Palestinians say, the steadfastness that Iran and other countries, the Houthis, Lebanon and others, have been very principled in their support for Palestine. Cuba too, they want nothing in return. They support it not because they desire critical minerals, as Trump wants, from the Ukraine. They support it because they believe every nation has a right to determine its own destiny. Every nation has a right to self-determination. And we have fought a long battle, and we are still continuing given the nature of our settlement, and we want to lend a hand so that Palestine one day can be a truly independent state of all its people.
Well, thanks a lot, Hassan Loggett and Dr. Firoz Osman, for your incisive analysis. And now we welcome you on Palestine as we mark the International Courts Day.
Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my son, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. I've dug the earth with my hands, my bare hands. I've searched for my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, son to you, see, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head
It's the story of my anger and your blood. The story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry. Have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since somebody inside my aching heart, somebody inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here, this land, your blood, my heart.
And that wraps it up for this week's edition of Africa Today. On behalf of the entire crew, it's me, Mubarak Kenya, saying goodbye for now.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything comes on you, the Lord Most High.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to the program Month of Allah. We were talking about brotherhood and the fact that we have other obligations, not only limiting ourselves to just spirituality, only limiting ourselves to our obligation towards God. We also have obligations to the creation of God. If a person only focuses on one part of spirituality or of one part of religion, it can be like a person that has, for example, a caricature of a person that has a very big ear or, say, a very big nose, meaning they have only focused on one part of their deen and one part of their religion. For us to be complete, it is very important for us to make sure that all parts of our religion and all dimensions of our religion are complete. And of those parts is brotherhood, that we should be very careful with the obligations that we have towards our fellow brothers. We should be very careful of the unity that we have, and we should always preserve unity amongst the Muslims. No matter what sect they are, no matter what part of the world they are from, we should solidify ourselves. And we all have one cause, and our cause is, inshallah, for us to reach God Almighty. It's important for us to know that the Imams, the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam, they can be displeased with us with the way that we disrespect our brothers, the way that we treat our fellow brothers. In a narration, it says that a group of people, they came to the eighth Imam,
Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam. And for a period of time they were waiting to see him, but the Imam did not want to see them. And then when they finally met him, they asked him, "How come you don't allow us to see you? How come you didn't allow us to see you?" And there the Imam told him that basically it is because of these following reasons. One, it is because you proclaim to be Shia, true Shia. But obviously they were not Shias. They were lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, but they were not at the level for them to even call themselves as true Shias. Other is the obligations they had towards Allah, that they were sinning. And one of the other reasons, and this is what I wanted to show you, brothers and sisters, is that the Imam alayhi salam tells him that you watataha wa nuna bi azim huquq ikhwanikum fillah, that you neglected the great rights of your brothers that they had in God's eyes, that you neglected their rights. So we will be liable in the Day of Judgment, that we can be in a way that our imams are discouraged from our actions if we are not careful about our fellow brothers. But now a question I have is this, is should we treat all brothers in our community? Should we sacrifice our time and effort for all of them? Should we become friends with anybody that's in the masjid or in the mosque or the Islamic Center? Well, for us to answer this question, we have to look at the narrations. The narrations give us a guideline about how to choose our friends. We should be very particular. A lot of times we allow our friends to choose us. When we look at these narrations, we should have the ability to choose our own friends. So what are some of the criteria for us to have true friends that we are going to be able to sacrifice for them, that we're going to give them our time and money? One of those characteristics that they should have is, when we look at from one of the traditions from Imam Ali alayhi salam, says your true brother is the one who forgives your lapse. If you find a brother that he forgives, sometimes you might become angry and you say, "I'm sorry." Your brother should be able to forgive your lapse. He fulfills your need. If you have a need, you need help, he comes and helps you. He accepts your excuse. If you explain to him why you behaved in this manner, he will accept it. He hides your vices. He doesn't zoom in into your faults. And he removes your fear and lives up to your aspiration. In another tradition we have from Imam Ali alayhi salam, a real brother is, he says, your brother is the one who does not abandon you in difficulty. Many people, when we test them, when we need them the most, we realize that they don't want to help us anymore. Test them to see when you have difficulty, will they come to your help? He does not forget you at the time of trouble and does not cheat you when you seek his advice. So these are the characteristics that a true brother should have. And these are brothers that we should be, that they deserve our help and they deserve our time. And these are people that we should connect with and we should spend our time with. So in this month of Ramadan, we inshallah will be getting closer to our own community. And inshallah we'll be choosing good brothers for ourselves that have these criteria.
قال الإمام الصادق عليه السلام: عليك بالدعاء فإن فيه شفاء من كل داء.
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, "I urge you to supplicate, for verily in supplication is a cure for every ailment."
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله ما لنا رب سوى
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of distinguished reciters of the Holy Quran in a gathering titled Communion with the Holy Quran. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on the first day of the blessed month of Ramadan, March 2nd, 2025. The Quran is the overall framework of individual and social life, the shape of social and individual life, a collection which the book contains it, clarifies it, and is an expression of it. And to teach them the book and the wisdom. Surah 62, verse 2. What is wisdom? It's knowledge and understanding of the truths of the universe. Something that allows people to grasp the truths of the universe. The recitation of the book teaches us these things. To recite to them, the Prophet, peace be upon him and his holy progeny, recites the Quran to the people in order to accomplish the following things. Purification, teaching the book and teaching wisdom.
Subhanallah, alhamdulillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah, alhamdulillah, wa la
What do you do? You who are the reciters are doing the same work as the Prophet. You also recite. The act of recitation is a prophetic task. The recitation of the Quran is of such great importance that you can change Quranic concepts into ideas that are accepted by the general public. There are thousands of important titles and headings in the Quran. For example, consider this verse, so that people may maintain justice. Surah 57, verse 25. Adopt a policy excusing the faults of people. Surah 7, verse 199. And remember Allah with frequent remembrance. Surah 33, verse 41. All of these are different titles and headings. One of the duties and functions of your recitation, if done correctly, is to change these concepts into certainties accepted by society's thinking. It should become an established matter in society that one must maintain justice and that one must remember God. Remember Allah with frequent remembrance. That one must forgive his or her brothers and sisters. Adopt a policy of excusing the faults of people, that one must fight in the way of Allah, and the other concepts that exist in the Quran. This isn't an overstatement. There are thousands of titles, topics, and headings in the Quran that can become a part of the common intellectual knowledge of the general populace. What makes this possible? Good recitation. That's when the people's Quranic knowledge will increase and they will think in the way that the Quran has taught.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pureza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Israeli authorities have released Palestinian filmmaker Hamdan Bilal, a co-director of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land, after detaining him overnight. Bilal was in Susia, a village in the occupied West Bank, when a group of Israeli settlers violently attacked him. Despite his injuries, Israeli soldiers arrested him instead of his assailants.
Settlers and army, they attacking my home and they beating me. They continue to beating me. It's like around between 15, 20 minutes until I was bleeding from all my head and face. And finally, after this attack, they took me to the place. I don't know what is it. I stay there. It's like all the night. They was laughing about me.
Bilal was taken into custody and was held overnight before being released.
On Monday, there was a massive attack on Susia village where my friend and colleague and co-director of No Other Land documentary, Hamdan Bilal, lives. There was an attack in his home and other houses in the village. Settlers and soldiers targeted him precisely to revenge against the success of the movie and against Hamdan as activists in the village that documenting the attacks of the settlers that happening on his village all the time and other villages in Masafer Yatta. This is not an isolated attack. Attacks happening all the time, but this time it was revenge and attack on Hamdan for his success to try to punish him and to silence him and to prevent him from doing his work.
Bilal's documentary No Other Land, co-directed with Palestinian and Israeli filmmakers, sheds light on the forced displacement of Palestinians.
This incident raises further concerns about the growing attacks on Palestinian journalists and activists. As Israeli violence escalates, documenting the reality on the ground is being silenced. Naqa Hamid, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
Palestine action supporters out in raucous numbers again outside the Old Bailey courthouse, demanding that the 18 members of the direct action group on trial here be released.
This is a court where people are tried for gruesome, brutal murders. And these people are on trial for actually trying to stop gruesome and brutal murders. In fact, there is a case here today of a couple who murdered their baby and put the baby in a plastic bag. In Gaza right now, people are putting their body parts of their loved ones in plastic bags every day. So the irony is, these people should not be anywhere near a court for trying to stop people from being murdered.
The 18 activists were arrested under the UK's Terrorism Act in August last year for targeting Israeli weapons manufacturer Elbit Systems' Filton facility in Bristol and causing over $1 million in damages to it. Their supporters say their prosecution is not aimed at upholding the law.
The trial is part of a wider pattern. From arrests to censorship, the activists here say the British state is criminalizing dissent to protect Israel against accountability and scrutiny. They argue that standing up for Palestinian rights is being treated as a crime.
Sarah Coate of Stand Up to Racism, Stand Up to Imperialism has experienced it firsthand. She, too, was arrested under counterterrorism legislation, accused of supporting a proscribed organization merely for saying Palestinians had the right to defend themselves.
This is what the British state does. It's the oldest imperialist nation in the world, and it's going to try by any means possible to defend its interests, and its interests lie in the continued genocide of the Palestinian people and the repression of popular movements around the world.
But the crackdown doesn't seem to be working. While the British government treats the Fulton 18 as lawbreakers and homegrown terrorists, their supporters hail them as heroes and consider them as political prisoners.
They're imprisoned because the UK state is trying to protect its relationship and its financial ties to Israel. And this is the extent that they'll go to. They're political prisoners because they have been imprisoned not for their actions, but for the government's politics and for the government's allegiances with their military outpost, aka the Zionist entity.
As Gaza continues to face relentless bombing and siege, the protesters here say they won't be silenced, vowing to keep demanding justice despite the risks. Saeed Purizab, London.
Under a unified sky, the territorial waters of Iran mirror a nation's resolve, coming alive as over 3,000 naval vessels participate in a monumental naval parade showcasing unwavering support for Palestine. The massive parade also demonstrates the strength and readiness of IRGC's naval forces, sending a strong message to adversaries just one day prior to international Quds Day rallies. This is not just a show of maritime prowess, but a symbol of solidarity, with the flags of Iran and Palestine waving proudly.
This is the fourth year that the naval parade is being held to mark the occasion, featuring civilian vessels from volunteer forces alongside other naval ships. First and foremost, this event sends a strong message of solidarity with Palestine. It also demonstrates to the Caspian Sea littoral states that this body of water represents friendship. Also, it demonstrates that Iran is always ready to support its people and protect its sovereignty against threats, as the parade is taking place simultaneously along the coast of the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman.
The parade, conducted simultaneously in Iran's territorial waters from the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman to the Caspian Sea, features a variety of vessels, from advanced naval warships to smaller boats manned by besieged volunteer forces, all proudly displaying the flag of Palestine next to the Iranian banner.
The event you are witnessing today is a naval parade conducted by the Iranian Navy and volunteer forces. Here at our naval base, 150 vessels of volunteer forces and 30 vessels from the IRGC Navy's northern base are participating in the parade in the north. This parade demonstrates solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine and condemns the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza. Additionally, it aims to showcase the military strength of the volunteer forces and to enhance unity among the various branches of the armed forces.
Ahead of international Quds Day rallies, this maritime demonstrations has tuned into an annual tradition, underscoring the enduring bond between Iran and Palestine.
And that's the message from Iran's territorial waters: unity, strength, and unwavering support for Palestine ahead of Quds Day,